This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi or Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that healing path, I have my dear friend Missy. Missy, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
Now, the reason why I want you on the show is you have a beautiful holistic perspective on life, and we've been having a lot of foodie adventures, and you're really creative and inspiring for me to witness. And yeah, I thought it'd be good to share your perspective, and I know there's going to be someone out there who will resonate or will find some truths and golden nuggets that will help them out. What you're doing at the moment is more around being creative with food, and especially vegan food, because you went to Bali and did a, what type of course was it?
I did a vegan chef training level one, so learning how to create these beautiful dishes without using any dairy or animal byproducts, which was a challenge, but it was also amazing to be put into that challenge and to see what can be created with the food, you know, by thinking outside the square and not just jumping into like rip opening a packet and being like, okay, yeah, there's cheese right there. Like making your own cheeses, your own mayos, your own gluten-free breads. And it was a huge eye-opener, and it was an amazing place to be in Ubud, Bali, and Sayuri Healing Foods, if anyone knows that place.
And you're not plant-based like 100%, right?
No, I'm not plant-based.
But you 100%. Love the challenge and the creativity behind making these meals.
Yeah, and I think with plant-based food, I think there's a lot of uncertainty around about if you not eliminate meat out of your diet, but if you cut down on your meat consumption through the week as to what to cook, what to eat, like what to use to eat. And I think some of it comes down to laziness, and some of it comes down to experience and knowledge and just not knowing what you can throw together. For example, I made a spaghetti bolognese the other night. It had no mince in it, and it was made with mushrooms, walnuts, and a protein product, soy protein product. And everyone that ate it, they were like, wow, like it just tastes like mince.
Yeah, it's very close. You couldn't, if you were to ask me, I would have to think really hard to say it was different, but it was so good.
Thank you. I just really enjoy the challenge of creating something that isn't just easy to create. So when you have a meat dish, you've got your meat, so your meat has a flavor already. So you're not really thinking about different flavors that you can put with that meat, because it already has like the fat on it, which gives it flavor, and the meat itself, where if you're using just plant-based, you need to have some season, some spices, but you need to kind of have an idea of what goes well with it. Or you just experiment like I do, or I call it intuitive cooking. So I will just go to the pantry and something will say inside of my head, yep, mix that with that, like curry and cumin. I'm like, okay, all right, let's just do that. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times it comes out pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not plant-based myself, but I love eating all types of foods. Like, you can attest that I love my vegan slices, you know.
You sure do.
And so I don't discriminate, right? And it's not being dogmatic or, you know, just saying this is the way. I love to be open to different flavors and tastes and textures, and especially when it comes with nutrition. What you cook with is, you know, quality ingredients, and you put a lot of love as well. You know, in Korea they call it hand taste, that other ingredient of love that gets infused with the food.
Yes, I do put a lot of love into it, because cooking is a passion of mine, and it always has been a passion. I would feel happy and grateful to be able to feed people, to make nice dishes and share them with all my friends and family, rather than just make a dish and eat it myself. You know, like the when you can share food and wellness, well-being with people, it's so much better, so much more rewarding. And I feel like, you know, you bring people closer and you can help them with their nutrition and how they're eating, and the healthier, I wouldn't say, like, when I say healthier, I'm not saying just like lettuce leaves and carrot sticks. I'm talking about, you know, not using refined sugars and using different alternatives and that, and having vegetables in your diet and making salads, but also having a balance of protein, and whether that be meat or fish or chicken. I will say one thing though, is like with going and doing the vegan training, I've really become so much more self-aware of where the meat comes from when it's on my plate in front of me. I would be like thinking to myself, if there's a steak on my plate, I would be thinking to myself, well, what did that beast encounter for me to you know, have this steak on my plate, you know, the sacrifice of its life for me to have this steak. And so I send so much gratitude, so much love and appreciation to that dish, like a karakia or a prayer, or just thanking the animal for giving up its life so I could eat a steak. And I feel like if people were a lot more aware of what's on their plate before they just hoe on into it, they would think twice about having meat every day of the week, because, you know, you're sacrificing animals, you're sacrificing something that is a living thing, so you can eat a steak or a fish fillet or a chicken thigh or whatever. So, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't eat meat, I'm just saying show more awareness when you're eating it and be grateful that you actually do have the ability to eat that.
it's a life that's now, it's given up its life for you to continue yours. And, you know, I guess you would call it conscious eating, being conscious of your eating.
Perfect. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Conscious eating, conscious wellness. If people did think a lot more about where that actually came from, then yeah, I really feel like people would think twice about how much meat they consume.
And not just knowing the source, but being conscious and mindful as you're eating it. Like, you know, we talked before about noting the smell, the texture, the taste, and taking your time. You know, there's the saying, drink your food, chew your water. So you chew until it's liquid, and with your water, you know, swirl it a few times so it absorbs better in your body. And not many people are doing that. I mean, I'll admit there'll be sometimes when I'm so hungry, I'll forget. And so I need to slow down. Or if I'm watching something, if, you know, I've got the phone in my hand, why is the phone in my hand? That's not conscious at all, right? But yeah, if we can all do that, you will actually feel fuller when you're doing this conscious, mindful eating. And you actually won't eat as much. And knowing the source of your food will, yeah, it will make you realize how much of a certain product or how much of a certain food you do want to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like when you are eating, you know, when you have a meal in front of you and you start to eat it, like there's obviously, well, when I say obviously, for me, there's a part that I take time to thank and be grateful for what I have on my plate. And then I'm eating the food and I'm putting my knife and fork down as I eat, as I chew through it. I'm not like still got my knife and fork in my hand and I'm like ready to hoe into the next bit. It's like, okay, I take some food into my mouth and I chew it and I taste texture, feel how it makes me feel. And then I swallow it after many times chewing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I really get present with that initial enjoyment. Well, I guess you can call it like a high. Like there's this enjoyment that comes from eating food, right? We all have that. whether it's crap food or good food, we all have this really nice feeling in our body. Can you be present to that and just really sit with that? Ooh, you know, that yum. Mm. That really, from food, right? We're not talking about drugs or anything here. We're talking about just from eating food. You can get that same rise in the body, that rise of energy. It just feels good.
The spike is like, hey, you know, this has got some beautiful flavors and some amazing texture. I'm going to enjoy and savor every single little piece and every little bite. Yeah, it's funny. You were, I used to work in an abattoir, so a freezing works. Yeah, I used to see the whole process of when the beast would arrive from the farm on the truck, and it would go into the corridor, and it would get stunned, and then it would go down, drop onto the bleed table. They'd slit its throat for halal, and you would see this poor cow pumping its legs and all the blood pumping out of it. And every time I close my eyes, I see that in that meat side of things. And I don't like to eat meat that is farmed and killed like that, because I know that when a beast, or even when the beast is on the farm and the truck arrives, it already knows what's going to happen. It's already got a stress and sense of danger or trauma inside of it. And as soon as it's loaded onto that truck, then all its muscles go tense and it's stressed, and stress, cortisol just runs through their body. And then, you know, they've got that long trip to the meat works, and then, you know, they smell death, they smell blood, and again, it's just this going all through their body, and then they get stunned and killed, and then that's all still staying in the meat, and then you're eating that meat. Again, I have awareness of what meat I eat and when I eat it and how I eat it, and I like to really just eat something that's like a home kill, or something that has been shot in the forest, like a deer, because of my time in that abattoir and the freezing works and seeing what I saw. Yeah, so I just really, I enjoy the farm, the free range, the home kill taste, and it tastes so different. You can really taste the difference. Yeah. And if you haven't tried it, like, go and get some home kill compared to what you get in the supermarket, and just cook them both up and just taste the difference, because one's got cortisol and stress all through its body, the other one didn't even know it was coming and just dead.
Yeah, it reminds me, when I was young, my mum would take us to a farm, a chicken farm, and we'd get farm chicken, you know, and then, you know, we'd be responsible for killing it and cleaning it. But that taste is so different to the chicken today in the shops. It's very different.
There's been a few chicken farms and poultry farms that I've seen as well. So I kind of veer away from chicken just in general. I'm more like, when I do eat meat, it's a red meat or a fish. A little fishy, some protein. But I'm quite happy with a lot of vegetable dishes, and moving into the vegan dishes without any dairy or animal byproducts. And I've made some bloody tasty dishes. Mm-hmm. And people are like, is this not dairy? Has this got no dairy in it? It's not cheese. And I'm like, no, it's not cheese. Oh, okay. All right, it's good, eh? Yeah, it's real good. And I enjoy being creative with those sorts of things.
So is this why you're doing Vegan Vibes?
Oh, yes. So Vegan Vibes is a vegan festival here in Mount Maunganui. It's been happening every year for quite a few years now. And they have like arts and crafts and music, and they have all these vegan vendors. And when I was doing my training in Bali, in Ubud and Bali and Sayuri Healing Foods, the vegan chef training, I was making all these beautiful food, all these beautiful dishes. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to randomly message Vegan Vibes and ask them if they've got a space for me, because I'm over here working with Sayuri herself, who is like a world-renowned vegan chef. And I would like to showcase some of her dishes back in New Zealand at Vegan Vibes. And so I emailed Vegan Vibes and sent them a few photos and that. And then they came back to me and they're like, absolutely, would love to have you. And I was like, oh gosh. I was like, oh, okay. All right. And I was just like, oh, I didn't see that happening. I didn't know that was going to happen. I thought, oh yeah, I'll give it a try. But yeah, so then from there, when they came back to me, I was still in Bali and I was thinking out what I was going to do, and the inspiration of Bali and the Balinese people and the food and everything is just so beautiful, so much goodness. And I was like, okay, well, what can I do to showcase what I've been doing but also put my own Missy twist on it? So I thought of a nasi goreng jackfruit pizza. I learned how to make a gluten-free pizza base. While I was over in Bali, I purchased a wood-fired oven, but it was a gas one, so it's a portable gas one. So I'll be taking that to Vegan Vibes, and I'll be making these nasi goreng jackfruit pizzas. And I also made these beautiful Life's a Blessing cakes, and they were like a cookie crunch bottom, and then they had peanut butter, coconut cream, slices of raw banana, cacao, and then peanut butter cream, raw banana, cacao, and the cookie top. And I was just like, that's what I want to do. And I want to bring those back to New Zealand too.
Yeah.
Those were my two like ideas to bring back and to do Vegan Vibes with those. And then I've always been like loving turmeric. I've always had a thing for turmeric. And
do they use a lot of that in Bali?
They do. Okay. So the jamu, which is a health tonic, which is a drink, but it's a tonic as well. And they drink that every day. They make it themselves and they drink it every day. And that's got like ginger and cinnamon and turmeric, lemon juice, some other different spices in it, and it aids in the digestion, anti-inflammatory, antifungal, antibacterial, like all these beautiful health and well-being things. And I was like, okay, well, I might do a turmeric latte and blend my own turmeric latte. So that's what I did. And that's when Golden Goodness decided to rise.
So I know you've got an Instagram page for your nice creative culinary arts. What's the name?
So the name of my Instagram page is Bite Me NZ, BiteMeNZ. And I basically created it. I'm not an Insta person. I'm not very good with social media.
It's a good thing, I reckon.
I created it, one, because Vegan Vibes were like, we want to tag you in these things. And, you know, what are we tagging you in? And I'm like, well, you can't really use my personal profile because that's got all sorts of stuff traveling and that on it. Yeah, so I created this Instagram page and I put on it creating what I want when I want. Because that's what I do. Like, you talk to any of my friends and even my flatmates, they've just said to me, they're like, It's like a lab in here, Missy. Like, we walk in the door and you're creating all these different foods and I don't even see you eat them. It's like you create them for everyone else and you give them to everyone else to share and to try. And it's, yeah, it's really good. So I just create whatever I want to create when I want to. But yeah, the Bite Me, so the Bite Me page has got a lot of my creations on it. And that's where Golden Goodness is. And that's where my Life's a Blessing Bites are. So if you want to jump on and have a look at what we're talking about. and also my Nasi Goreng pizza is on there.
You just on that pizza, like how long did it take you to come up with the gluten-free base? Because I know most places, if you go anywhere, it's the same base. It's just a store-bought gluten-free base. It's very rare to find someone that makes their own base because it is quite difficult.
Yeah, yep. Seven times. Seven experiments to make a gluten-free base with all different types of binders and gels and all natural, all gluten-free.
Starches and flours.
Yeah, just trying to get the right combination, trying to get the right consistency, the right texture. Oh, it was crazy. At night, waiting for the yeast to rise so I can, you know, so I can work with these bases and try and create these beautiful gluten-free bases because a lot of my friends are gluten-free. And I did create bases over in Bali that were gluten-free, but they were from a gluten-free mixture that they already had. So it was up to me to kind of pull and balance out these mixtures, and especially with like the gums and the gels that we use to bind things together because we don't have gluten in them. So there's no binder, so you have to create a binder. And I had a few attempts where I made these bases and they were pretty good, but I was like, oh no, nah, just not happy with it. It's not sitting right with me. And then I just kept on going. And I finally got something that I'm happy with. So I'm going to run with that one for Vegan Vibes, but I'm going to pre-cook them a bit. So I'm not dealing with raw dough on the day.
Yeah, exciting. Okay, so how did you get here? How did you get to Bali in that course? What's your journey? Because you've got a diverse background. You know, you've done many different things and you're getting more into the holistic health and wellness sides of life. And yeah, it's been a journey, right?
It absolutely has. And you hear the saying, health is wealth. When people say they want to be wealthy, most of the time it's to do with money. But for me, wealth is health. So my number one thing is that I want to be healthy. I want to be fit, strong, and healthy. And then life will just run a whole lot smoother when you have your health behind you.
Absolutely.
You can have so much money, and then if you get sick, then you can't do anything with the money because you're sick. So but that is the frontliner, health. And my journey, it's actually a very long journey. It started a very long time ago when I was in a relationship that wasn't the best, and I really neglected myself, and I got very skinny and I wasn't eating, and there was lots of things that were coming up for me, lots of trauma, lots of suppressed emotions and experiences that I just kind of pushed down. And I broke up with the partner that I was with, and I decided to go over to Australia, Byron Bay, and do ayahuasca. And I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I did have an idea, but the information that I was sent to and told to watch these movies on Netflix and all this sort of stuff, and I watched the movies and in one of the movies, the guy dies doing ayahuasca. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, I'm still going to do it. And so that was kind of like the first, I guess it was the first shift that happened into that health and wellness, because it was clearing all the old toxins, whether it's trauma or suppressed anger or emotion, out of your body.
Did it get rid of some old beliefs?
Absolutely. Yeah. It got rid of a lot of grief and a lot of sadness and a lot of guilt around just not being able to be there, and also able to let go of things that I hadn't been able to let go of and just surrender. And I think that's the big word, surrender. That ayahuasca journey was mad. It was crazy. And every journey was like so different. I don't know if you want me to go into it or not, but I had three totally different experiences, journeys with the same medicine, of the same batch, with the same shaman, with everything the same, but the intention and the awareness that you put into yourself, into your body, into your mind before you go in for that journey. Even if you don't think about it, you come out of that journey and you're like, oh my gosh, that's what it is, or you know, that's happened. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on there. Recap, I broke up with my partner, so I had a lot of sadness, a lot of hurt, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment for him. So my first journey was about self-love and acceptance and being deserving of something better.
Mm.
And letting go of the resentment and the anger and the hurt that he had put towards me. And
was that forgiveness?
Yeah, it was so powerful. And I always say, you know, like, it's more energy to be angry with someone than it is to just forget, send love, and just let them go. And I truly believe that, because I spent so much energy with him and other partners where I could have just let it go. And now I do just let it go. And that was a huge, huge lesson for me there.
And the other two journeys?
The other two. So the second one was around, I had a miscarriage. It was about 4 years before that. And she was a little girl. And she came to me in this journey. And she wanted me to forgive myself. She said to me, I actually saw her. She was standing there in this pink little dress with these red roses on it, this long brown ringletty hair, these big brown eyes, and this beautiful olive skin. And she said to me, she's like, Mummy, don't worry. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel sad. I'm okay. You need to let me go now. And oh my God, the tears just, whoa, waterworks. I was just shaking on the floor and everything was coming over me. And I was like, whoa, this is so intense. But at the time, it was like a part of me that had been stuck in my body for so long just released. And I just like dropped, and I was just like so free. I felt so free because I had been holding all this guilt and sadness, because, you know, like, I thought that I couldn't bring her to term, and it was, you know, it was my fault that I couldn't, and it was my fault that she wasn't there today, you know. So there was a lot around that, and I didn't realize how much was around that until I went into that journey, and she was there. So that was very, very, very hard to go through, but it was very enlightening and cleansing.
It's interesting, where that enlightening, like it lightens.
It does.
Lifts the burden, yeah.
It felt like there was just a weight off me, and that I was able to breathe again and be able to not feel so sad around not being able to bring her to term.
Yeah. And the third journey?
Well, the third one was totally different. So I didn't say about the purging that happened, because the purging with the ayahuasca, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Like if you're still not letting go and you're holding it in, then you're not going to purge, because you're always fighting the Mother Aya. You're always fighting her, and you just need to surrender. And of course, I just surrendered. And on that first one, I was taking the medicine, and then I went back and sat on my little cocoon that I had made. And I was just there, and I was in all this beautiful pinks and yellows and light blue colors, and I was feeling like I was just cuddling myself, and there was lots of self-love and self-acceptance, and I was feeling so great. And then the dark colors started to come over, and I was like, oh, what's happening here? It was like a storm was coming, and the music that was playing started to get really deep and drummy, and it just was all working, and she was working through my body. And I was like, oh, I don't feel very good. Oh, I feel really bad. Like, actually feel really bad in the tummy. And I was like, oh no, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. And she was talking to me, Mama Aya, she was talking to me. She was saying, no, no, you're not going to be fine. You're going to have to go to the toilet. And I was like, oh no. Nah. And I was fighting against her. And she was telling me, no, Missy, you're going to have to go. Like, if you don't go, there's going to be some serious accident. And I was like, oh, okay. And all of a sudden, my tummy just went like in knots, and I would just had to rush to the toilet. And I just had a time on the toilet, which is abnormal. I don't even want to say what happened, but just purged, not through the mouth. So, and I just cleansed myself out of all of it. And then I came back, and she was like, okay, now you can just enjoy the rest of the journey. You've done what you need to do. And that was on the first one. So when I felt like I was okay, the next journey, the shaman was like, okay, so the next one. And I'm like, the next one? Oh no, I don't want that. No way. I don't want to go through that again. I did like really sensitize it. Like it was real graphic, but I didn't want to say that on let everyone know that. But so the next journey, you know, was the grief and forgiveness and all that. So that was a lot different as well. And I didn't purge, but I felt the release and the enlightenment in that. And then the last one was a healing journey. And the shaman said to me, she was like, well, you're going to love this. And I was like, okay, all right, well, okay. And she was going around the room. Like we'd had our medicine, and she was going around the room. She was healing people that were sick in some way. She didn't know how they were sick. She didn't know them. They just turned up, and we were all a group together, and she didn't know us. And the guy that she was working on, he had a brain tumor. And she worked on his head, and she blew tobacco smoke into his head, and then she sucked it out. And as she sucked it out, I looked into her eyes and her eyes were just black. They were like something else was in there. And then she kind of just breathed out this darkness and it was like something out of, what's that movie? And he goes, oh, The Green Mile.
Right.
Yeah. If anyone knows The Green Mile, it was like that. It was like she sucked all the toxins and all the bad crap out of his body and then just blew it away. And just at that point in time, I was like, looked at her and I was thinking to myself, I wonder if she's going to pick up on my endometriosis, because I had endometriosis. Well, I had all the signs and I'd gone to the gynecologist and he said, yes, you got endometriosis, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. And as soon as I said that, she came over and she put her hand down by my womb and she was like, don't worry, we're going to fix that. And I just burst into tears. Just so much emotion came over me. And she worked her shaman gifts on me and she healed me. So I never had it. From that day, I never had any symptoms of endometriosis again.
That's amazing.
So it was huge. That journey was huge. And going back to the health side of it, then that was the clearing of my body. You know, I'd purged, I'd forgiven, I'd surrendered, and I'd healed. And from there, I came out of that and I was just like, whoa, I need to really look after my body. Like this is part of me and I can't neglect it and I need to look after it. So from there, I started to really like just look into different foods and cooking and ways of cooking. And I'd always enjoyed cooking, but not to the extent of like making my own recipes and giving them to my friends and being like, do you want to try this? And they'd try it and they'd be like, oh my God, miss, this is amazing, you know. And I feel like that intuitive cooking has happened like from the ayahuasca journey. It's like Mama Aya had come to me and said, this is one of your gifts and I want you to use this. Yep. To help other people.
Mm. Yep, you do have a gift. So would that be part of shadow work, doing those sort of journeys?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So shadow work, I've done a lot of that as well. I've done...
shadow being the side of you that you repress and deny.
Yeah, yeah. That where it hides. Mm. You hide in it. You put things in it and you hide them there.
Yeah. Things and parts of you. And
yeah. So the ayahuasca was the first real deep dive into that. I had done a little bit of Reiki massage and Reiki healing from beautiful man here in Papamoa. And I also did some timeline therapy, which... it's when you go back to a time in your life where you felt, when you first felt sadness, or you first felt grief, or you first felt anger, and you go back to that time and you relive that time and you put it right.
Put it right.
By going back into that time and place and experience, I'll give you an example of one from me. Abandonment. And I knew, like, my mum and dad, my family are amazing and they were with me growing up, like they were always around, but they were never present. So being around, my mum's a hairdresser, she had a salon connected to the house. My dad was a stock buyer and he would be in his office. So I could hear them and I could see them, but they were never really present with me. And I had this pet rabbit, Mrs. Buns. She was this white little rabbit with little red eyes. And it was when I was 4 years old. It was a stormy night, and the rabbits got out, and Thumper, who was my brother's rabbit, died in the swimming pool. The other little rabbits ran away. And then my mum and dad said to me, Mrs. Buns ran away. And all I heard was, Mrs. Buns ran away from you. And so from that time, when I was 4 years old, Mrs. Buns ran away from me. So I'm like, well, I'm not worthy of having anyone. And, you know, like, I'm not deserving. And anyone that I love and hold dear is going to run away. And I carried that for so many years through my relationships, and all my relationships, my partners, I was holding on to them so tight that I didn't actually see how toxic they were for me. I just wanted and needed that person because I didn't want them to abandon me like the rabbit did when I was 4 years old.
So that was the story that was living in your shadow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, there's a lady, Deb Griffiths, here in Mount Maunganui. She's amazing. She's a life coach. And one day I was just on Facebook, and she had a complimentary session to go to, and I emailed her, and I already knew her when I was working in recruitment, and she was one of the managers that I used to put temps into. And I was like, hey Debs, how's it going? It's Missy here. And she was like, hey babes, how are you? And I was like, great. And I was like, I wanted to take you up on your free session. And she was like, yeah, no worries. And then we made a time, and I went to see her. And straight away, it was like my mind and my body knew that it wanted to release all this stuff. And it was like, before I even got to the session, I was bringing up all this stuff. It was all coming up in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, what about that? What about that? What about that? And then she was asking me some questions. She was like, how do you see yourself? How is Missy? What is Missy? How does she feel? You know, all these different questions. And I'm like, how do I feel? What am I? Who am I? Like, what do I like? What do I like to do? And then the timeline therapy came in, because she asked me, she said, when was the first time that you felt sad? I said, it wasn't sadness, it was abandonment. And that's where we moved into that whole thing. Like, my parents were there, but they weren't present. And bless them, they're amazing. They've been together 54 years this year, and they've been married 54 years. And like, I take my hat off to them, and they've got such a beautiful relationship. But they only know what they know, and what they've been taught, and what they've learned, and what their lessons have been learned. So I went through a lot of different timeline therapy with Debs. And she was amazing. We pulled through so much stuff. And that was some more shadow work. So the timeline therapy.
So is that like telling yourself a new story, a different story?
Yeah. Mm. So you go back to that time. Like, you retell it. And you retell it how you want it to be, how you want it to be captured inside of yourself. How you want to move forward with it.
Mm.
How you want to really remember it. So, yeah, that was a huge part of the shadow work and that. And then there's the breath work. I connected with another guy. He was in Bali at the time. He's actually in Auckland now, Steve Jones. And I knew I was going to Bali. This was the first time I went to Bali, and I was messaging him, and I said, you know, like, when I'm in Bali, I'd really like to come and see you. He was like, okay, let's make it happen. And we did. And I went and saw him, and I had a 3.5 hour breathwork session with him.
Wow.
And because I thought, oh, it's all gone, you know, the ayahuasca, the timeline therapy, everything, it's all gone, it's all gone, it's all gone. But I'm not an expert on breath work, and I don't pretend to be either. But I know for me, getting into that place of, and he said it was deep down in my chest, in my heart, in my chest. And sometimes you just can't get there with those other therapies and things. And when we did this session, I was rising up off like my chest and my shoulders, and I was like, there was so much that needed to be released that I had still stored down deep. And after that session, I was so exhausted. But, you know, that was what I wanted to do. So every time I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do. Okay, I'm going to go do it. So I hear of something and I'm like, yeah, actually, I do want to do that. I check in with myself and I'm like, do I need this? Or is this just something that I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe, maybe not. Like, is this really aligning with me? Is this going to help me? Am I going to be able to navigate around this? That's a big one. When things like that happen, you have to transition back, right? So navigating around all that, being like, do I want to be exposed? Do I want to be vulnerable? All sorts of stuff comes up. But, you know, breath work was amazing, and I do a little bit of breath work here and there. But interesting, I went to Bali just being, and I went and saw, oh gosh, this is another story. It seems like with me that there is always the synchronicity that happens. So I'll go to meet someone and they won't be available, but they'll lead me to someone else who I'm meant to be, who I'm meant to spend time with or see or do something with. And it was exactly that when I was in Bali and I was in Sidaman, which is a beautiful place. I was doing a meditation, sort of just a meditation day with my beautiful friend Maitreya. And after I'd finished that, I went and took my flute. I just bought a Native American flute and I took it over to Bali. And don't ask me why I bought it. It was just something that said you need to get a Native American flute and you need to start playing it. So I was like, okay. So I did that. So that experience, like after the meditation, I started walking down the road playing my flute. I wanted to play it to the farmers in the rice fields. And then as I was walking, I just get this massive pull of energy to just go left. And this was quite late in the evening. And I was like, what is happening here? But I surrendered to it and I just went where the direction was telling me. And it ended up going to a chakra healer and balancer. And he did this beautiful session on me. He said my chakras were absolutely balanced and there was no problem. But he did say that the breath work stimulates the prana and I have too much energy as it is. And I shouldn't be doing too much of that. So that's where that came from. That's why I was talking about that. So I listened to what he said. So I do a little bit of breath work here and there. He said for me, my exercises and what I should be focusing on is strength holds. So something that is going to, you know, like what did he said, reinvest the energy. I think he used that name, reinvest the energy. So for example, if you're doing a plank and you're holding that until you can't hold it any longer, then you're letting that energy out, but you're still reinvesting it at the same time.
Yeah.
Where breath work, you're like, whoo, whoo, whoo. So you're letting it out and it's going. And he's like, you're just like, but you're creating all this prana at the same time. So that's where that went to.
That's great. I mean, you got to know yourself, right? Like for someone, they might need a lot of breath work.
Yes.
Someone else, they might need to do a lot of, I don't know, weight training or sprints or endurance. Who knows? Like you got to figure that out for yourself. Like what I'm getting from you is a lot of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right? Being conscious of who you are and why you're here and what you're about and who you were. And all of this changes, right? Like we talked about the other time about purpose. And what is our purpose? What is your purpose in life? Well, what's your purpose now is what I think about. I don't know if you have one single purpose in life, but you have multiple ages in your life, eras, and you grow out of them, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's going to be growing pains with that, but then what's your purpose now compared to what it was before? Will change. It has for me anyway. That's been my experience.
Oh, absolutely. I think when people say, you know, what's your purpose? Or I want to find my purpose. I want to find my purpose. I think if you just want to find your purpose, you'll be looking for a long time, because I don't think there's just one purpose in your life. I think you learn and experience lots of different things, and your purpose could be being giving love and kindness to all beings. And you could just run with that. Mm. And then you could be already doing your purpose. Like I was talking to you the other night, and I was saying, well, I'm creating this beautiful food. I'm healing people's digestive systems. I'm helping people be happy with what they're eating and how they're feeling, and teaching them how to cook these beautiful recipes and things like that. And maybe that's my purpose right now. Maybe that is like what I'm meant to be doing this time round. And then maybe it could be something else later, you know. Mm. So I think people get so caught up in what their purpose is. And it really scares people that they don't know what their purpose is, because then they're like floundering. Mm. They're like, oh, you know, like I haven't got this thing that I'm working towards. Yeah. But it's like, you know, how you have goals. I always say when you have a goal, well, I call it an intention for me. So the goal and the when you're working towards the goal, it's like you're doing milestones. So you're always like, you're not way up here at the goal, you're doing a milestone to reach the goal, and then another milestone, then another milestone. And then that way you don't get disappointed because you haven't reached that goal in that certain amount of time. And you're always having an achievement of a milestone as you're going to the goal. Yeah. I think that's very important. I think when I was doing tutoring for a company that helped people get off the benefit and get into work, I was the employment placement consultant. So that's what I was doing. I was helping people on the benefit in a classroom, learning CV skills, interview skills, you know, confidence, motivation, how to dress and everything like that. And I was saying, an example was actually a lot of them wanted to be able to walk around the mount or walk up the mount. I'm like, well, maybe you want to set some little milestones, like maybe from, say, from the toilets to the mount, you know, like you can walk that far, and then the next day you can walk a little bit further, and then the next day you can walk a little bit further, and always have these little achievements. Because if you don't, when you don't get to that goal in that one time or whatever, you're going to be like, oh no, I didn't complete it. I didn't achieve it. It's like, it's too big.
Yeah, it's like success breeds more success. So if you just get those little wins, then you eventually get that big win.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And I think the little wins obviously contribute to the big win.
Yeah, a lot of people just focus on that big win though. So even when they have these little wins, they don't appreciate or have gratitude or even celebrate the success. Yeah. I mean, there's joy to be found in a lot of, you know, in every moment really. And if you focus too far ahead, you'll miss what's in front of you.
So I flash back to when I was actually tutoring the class, and I just remember on the whiteboard, and I had this line going up, and I had a star at the top, but I had all these little stars off. You know, and these are the little milestones. And I was just saying to them, just make sure you have the milestones, because they're achievements and they're worth celebrating. And the big celebration is at the top, but even these little ones, they're all celebration, because they're all success and they're all growing and they're all getting closer to that that last goal that you're wanting to achieve.
Yeah, people think it's going to be like a straight line to where they're going. It's usually got a lot of valleys, a few peaks, lefts and rights, you know, a lot of unexpected events on the way. And then sometimes on the way to your goal, the goal changes.
Yes.
And you need to be flexible and adjust, because if you get really attached and on the original goal, even though the universe or something is telling you, no, change the goal.
Yeah.
That's where suffering comes in.
With the change of direction, you'd be getting to the same destination. You're just taking a different pathway. So, you know, you've still got the focus on that destination, but you might have just taken a left turn or a right turn instead of going straight through, because that's how it was meant to be. Because then taking those other turns, that might have brought you to other opportunities and other ideas and other experiences that you needed to complete in this lifetime for your learning and for your lesson to be learned.
I think at the end of the day, all of our goals are the same. Like it's peace, it's love and joy. But what that looks like for you could be a house, could be a career, could be money, could be family. And those material goals and, you know, goals with family and whatever, losing weight, all those goals may change. But behind them is that peace, love and joy. It's that satisfaction. It's feeling content with life. So it doesn't matter actually what the goal is. Hopefully at the end of that, it's that emotional feeling of being okay with your life and with yourself. But you can have that now, I guess.
Yeah, you could have that now if you wanted to have that now. I feel like a lot of people are quite hard on themselves and they're like, no, I've got to achieve that. I've got to get this. Just be present. Just take the time. Sit with yourself and ask yourself, what do I need right now? Just ask, just sit there, what do I need right now? And how am I going to go about doing that? Well, like, where is this going to come? And it'll come up. I feel like when I go to make a decision, I'll always check in with myself. Be like, okay, how does this feel? And straight away, I'd be like, nah, it's no good, or yes. You know, like there is that connection with yourself that a lot of people don't tap into.
Yeah.
Your intuitiveness.
Yeah.
Your intention of why you're doing this. And I think a lot, like when you go to do something, the intention behind it is massive. Intention is a huge thing.
Yeah, I mean, without intention, why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this is because this is how I've always done it. But do you know why?
And some people are like, they learn to like just do it because they're doing it. But they don't stop to think, well, what is my intention? Why am I doing it? And then they just do it. And then they're like, oh, actually, that's why I'm doing it. You know, like, and it comes to them. But realizing that intention before you actually do it is going to be a lot stronger for yourself to grow and develop and learn.
How could someone practice increasing their intuition, do you think? Because, I don't know, you didn't always have it, right? It sort of came after your shadow work.
Yeah, the intuition. I feel like it is just getting that relationship with yourself really strong.
So the knowing yourself, why, what, where, how, where am I going, why am I here, asking those questions, having intention.
Yeah.
And that's like building that intuition muscle.
Building that relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
Because that is you. The intuition is you. Using your initiative is you. Like your heart is you. Like your... You know, all of that focus is you. It's inside of you, and it always is going to be inside of you. It's just, how do you tap into it? I feel like I've opened myself up more with being just more open with different opportunities in that as well, and really asking grace, God, light, whatever you want to call it, universe, whatever, and asking and being like, what am I doing right now? And why am I doing this? Like, how am I feeling about it? Is this the right is this the right feeling, or should I be doing this? And the more you ask, the more it gets stronger. And to the point where sometimes I'm like, before I've even said it to myself, I've already thought of it and it's already processed, and I'm like, okay, no, I'm not gonna do that. It just gets stronger and stronger. It's like a muscle. It gets stronger when you work it, and working it is using it.
Yeah.
So back to the purpose. I think if you don't know your purpose, just focus on be kind and give love to all beings. And then if everyone does that, this place will be such an amazing place to be.
Yeah.
Until such time as when your purpose for that time reveals itself.
Mm. Yeah.
Then just roll with that. Yeah. Because that's a beautiful way to live.
Yeah. I remember I'm giving advice to like nieces and nephews talking about courses. What course should I do? I don't know what I want to do. Da, da, da. Pick one. Anyone. And on the way to that, you'll find what you need to do.
Yes.
Yeah. It'll come. If you don't know, just pick one and then it'll become clear.
Yeah, because when you start to open that door, then the opportunities start to come through.
Yeah.
It's not until you open the door that you're not going to get the opportunities.
You'd rather open the wrong door than not open any door.
Yeah.
Because then on the way, you'll find the right door.
Because you're meant to find it. It's like that, you're meant to find it. You're meant to find what you need to find.
Yeah. So a question I like to ask, and I'm pretty sure I've asked you this before. Yeah, this is a self-awareness practice, because we say this word and we don't even know, is it what I mean, or is it what I've been taught? How do you define love?
Ah, yes, you did. You did ask me this.
So when you say it, what are you actually meaning? What are you giving? And when you receive it, what is it that you're hearing and getting in return? Using a word that isn't love, how do you define it?
So when you say love, I look at two different words for love. I look at being in love and love for the family and the friends and things like that. The love is, and with all of that, for me, is like a care and a feeling of, I don't want to say being needed or wanted, but coming together and sharing experiences in that.
So caring?
Caring.
Sharing the caring?
Sharing the caring. How do I define love? Like a happiness, a state of happiness. So when you feel love, like the warm fuzzies come over you.
So a warm physical sensation.
There's that emotional, like, this person really loves me and I really love them.
Meaning like this person really cares?
Cares, and yeah, there's that connection, and I think of the words, but kind of more like the compatibility that you both share together, and the synchronicities that you share together, and the way that you are and connect with each other. I feel like that when you're sharing the same values, but when you're sharing the same thoughts, and when you're sharing the same, it's like the whole package. I don't know.
So it's like an alignment.
An alignment, yes.
Body, mind, soul.
Yes, beautiful.
An alignment of connecting, like, yeah.
Yeah, like you...
Well, it's like when you love God, or whatever you want to call this mysterious...
Higher power.
When you have that love and it loves you, there's an alignment there.
There is. Mm. An alignment, perfect. The alignment with the body, mind, spirit, and soul.
Is that what you're sort of getting when you're giving it, like... There's an alignment with me and these people. And
yes.
When I'm receiving, oh yeah.
Yes. And I feel like when you have that, you really know you have it. Like, it's not a wishy-washy.
Mm.
It's like
Like, I see it as a sensation, eh?
Yeah, when I think about partners that I've had in the past, I've thought I'd love them, but they were so out of alignment with me. I was just wanting them to be there because of the abandonment.
And you weren't in the best healthiest state of your life. No. So you weren't even, they were in line, but with your
unhealthy old
state. Yeah.
Yeah, with my old ways.
Now that
ways,
you've changed your state, your alignment with other people will change as well.
And I see that. Like, I see that. Like, I met you, beautiful you. I met some other beautiful people and, you know, vibe with your tribe. I love that saying. Vibe with your tribe. When you feel that vibe, that love vibe, you know because of all those alignments that happen, you're like, whoa, like, is this really, are you really feeling, you know, like everything just, it just
it sounds
all
like
connects.
A flow, eh? A flow as well.
Yeah.
That's where everything flows. That's when there's love in the room.
Yeah.
Or love in the air.
Yes, alignment. That's a great word. Alignment, because you're aligning with all these different parts.
You know, love is everything, really, isn't it? Like, everything is love, and it's about, is your meaning of love similar to someone else's? Like, that's why some people stay in abusive relationships, because that's love to them. And that's what they align with, and it's not right or wrong, it's just what it is. And I guess why I like to ask this question is self-awareness. What do you actually mean? Is it true what love means to you right now? Yeah, but no, that's a beautiful, beautiful definition. What about the opposite? Well, some say it's the opposite. I personally think it's something else, but fear.
Fear.
What comes up with you with fear? Like, well, you know, there's false evidence appearing real.
Fear is courage becoming known. Fear is courage becoming known. So for me, fear. Feel the fear and do it anyway. The fear is out of the comfort zone, and nothing ever good came from comfort zones. So when I feel the fear, I know that it transmutes into courage. So it's not actually fear, it's courage. You need courage to do something. You fear something,
which causes you to pause and stop.
Yes. But the courage gives you, it gives you the courage to go through with it.
To keep moving forward.
Yeah, to keep moving forward, yeah. So when I feel fear, let's talk about the tattoo. I have an eagle on my, tattoo of an eagle on my, what do you call this part here? Oh, forearm, yes, just below my elbow on the inside. And when I was in Thailand last year, I was loving it. I was in Koh Tao, I was diving, I did a dive cert, snorkeling, lots of fun time. And then I rang my friend and I said, hey, Mark, how you going? And he said, oh, I'm good, good. And I was like, oh, I'm in Thailand. And he goes, you should do a Vipassana. And I was like, what? I was like, what do you mean? What are you doing? And when I was in New Zealand, I was always kind of lining up a Vipassana to do up north, and it never worked out with work and everything like that. So it was already in the back of my mind. And he was like, oh, there's some amazing ones in Thailand. And I was like, okay, he goes, jump online. So I jumped online to dharma.org, and I looked at the Vipassana's availability, and there was nothing. Everything was booked up. And I was like, oh, okay. There was one that was available, well, not available. It was like shortlist. And it was in Jakarta. And I was like, oh, gosh. All right, well, I thought, okay, well, I'll just apply for it anyway. I probably won't get in, like, no problem. I'll just apply and see how I go. Anyway, 3 days later, I get a response back from them saying, oh, yeah, response back from them saying, oh no, one day later I get a response back saying you've been shortlisted for the wait list. No, shortlisted from the wait list. I was like, cool, okay. And then 3 days later I get an email saying you've been accepted, you need to be in Jakarta at 7th of July, I think, and yeah, and we'll pick you up from the airport and everything. I was like, what? Like everything just happened. Like it always just happens because I'm always just like, okay, I'll go do that or I'll do that.
Well, it sounds like vegan vibes. You just put it in. And
yeah. Yeah, just whatever happens, happens. Whatever's meant to be will be. And so I did, first of all, I was like, well, what am I doing? Like this is this beautiful island and here I'm going to go and sit for 10 days in silence, not being able to talk to anyone. So I went out on the beach and I was walking down to the water and I again, checking in with myself. What am I doing? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Like, what? Why should I be doing it? Should I be doing it? Asking me all these questions. And I looked up and there was this big eagle circling around my head, like not far above me either, like it was very close, and I was just like, whoa. For me, an eagle is that as a messenger, carries a message. And at that point I looked over to the shoreline and I saw this local guy just standing there just shaking his head, just like in disbelief of what's happening right there in front of his eyes. And I was like, is this normal? And he was like shaking his head going, no. I was like, oh, okay, all right. Well, so after that, I went and got my little tattoo and I went and did the Vipassana in Jakarta. But I felt a lot of fear going to very much a Muslim place and not very safe. And I had asked a lot of my friends, you know, what do you reckon I should do? I've just been accepted for a Vipassana in Jakarta, and they were like, oh, it's very dark, and you know, like it's not a fun place to be, and there's a lot of like, you know, sort of lower vibrational energy there and everything. And I'm like, oh god, great,
thanks.
But I felt the fear and I did it anyway. Like I said, fear is courage becoming known. So I had the courage to move forward with it and forget about the fear and just move forward with it. And it's one of the best things I've ever done in my whole entire life. And like people will listen to that and go, what, sitting for 10 days in silence? Like this was like the structure of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 hour meditation sit, then some breakfast, and then after breakfast another hour determination sit. So that was something that you could not move in. Then a break, and then another 2 hours, and then another determination sit, and then another 2 hours, and then the discourse with Guenka himself, or not himself, but on the screen, and he was telling us, you know, like what we should be experiencing, what we're doing and why we're doing it and everything like that. And that went on for 10 days. And we only had 2 meals a day. We lived with someone else in the room, but we weren't allowed to talk to them. No eye contact, wow. No gestures, no nothing. And me coming from a background of hospitality, sales,
you had to restrain yourself, eh? Yeah.
Well, I thought that everyone was like, oh my god, Busy, you won't be able to do that. What are you talking about? You can't shut up. And I'm like, you know what? I can. And when I want to become silent and quiet, I can. And I did. And a lot of people don't make it. A lot of people leave within 3 days. And then that's just when you're starting to learn the actual Vipassana. Like after that 4 day, or in that 4 day moving forward, that's a totally different practice. And yeah, I did it. And I was like, wow, I actually did it. I sat for 9 hours, 10 hours each day in silence. What I learned from that is that I can do it. And anything that I put my mind to, I can do. The ego and the fear of failure is a massive thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I kept on coming up against every time I wanted to start something new. So with Bite Me NZ, oh my gosh, I've had so many different ideas of what to do, like, that would always bite me in the ass, the fear of failure. And I was like, looking at my tattoo, feel the fear and do it anyway. Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Fear is courage becoming known. You know, like, and I would just drill this into my head. Trust and know. Trust and know. And when I say trust and know, you trust that you know. Because you do know. And when you are able to trust yourself in the knowing, then it will all be great.
Trust and know.
Not know and trust. Trust and know. And I think that's really important that they are said like that, because you have to trust within yourself to know, if that makes sense.
So it's like a surrendering, like trust is like surrendering.
Trust that you have got yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have it all inside of you. Everyone has it all inside of them. It's the ego. I don't like to talk about the ego because everyone's like, it's the ego, it's the ego. But
it's ego.
That little thing in your head that's like, no, you can't do this. Yeah, no, yeah. No, you're no good. No, this is going to fail. This is going to fail. But failure is not trying,
isn't
it?
Yeah, the real failure is when you don't learn from the failure. It's when there's no learning, where you're going nowhere. Whereas if you move somewhere from that failure, it's not a failure, it's a learning. You've actually grown.
Yes.
It's called growth. Oh, I failed at this business. No, you grew from it. Yeah. Oh, I failed at this relationship. No, you learned from it.
Amazing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we go into relationships to learn things. And, you know, like, if it's a relationship that doesn't continue on, we have learned things from it. And that helps us grow and become more stronger in our own selves.
If you're able to process the losing of that relationship, which is like, it's the same with grief. If you can process grief, someone or something you've lost, then you can move on stronger. Whereas if you get stuck in grief, you turn into depression.
Yes.
And if you get stuck in this relationship, I don't want to lose it, then you just go round and round and you never grow, you never learn. And maybe you just get the same relationship with another person and it goes on and on, karma, until you learn.
Yeah. So the one thing that I learned also, well, not the one thing, I learned lots of things from my relationships, but the one thing that stood out for me was after the dust had settled a little bit and, you know, like the soreness wasn't there, the hurt, the real hurt, the stinginess of the, like, oh, I resent you, you suck, you know, like, I hate you, all that sort of stuff. That had kind of come through, then I went back to them and I said, let's sit down and talk about what actually happened in our relationship and how we could have done things better and how we actually felt in that time, because we learn from that.
Yeah.
And I was like, with my ex-partner of 4.5 years, the one that I, after we broke up, I went did the ayahuasca. It was like, we sat down and I was like, how were you feeling at that time? And he told me, and I was like, why didn't you say that to me? You know, like, then there was so much there that I didn't know. So much in the background that he was going through with his family and pressure and all that sort of stuff. And it was a great learning for me. Absolutely. And I think that for everyone out there, if you can finish that relationship it might not be on a good note to start off with, but if you can go back there and talk about what happened in that relationship and how you were feeling and why it happened, then you will learn so much from that.
Yeah. So fear is all about learning.
Yeah.
Or fear of failure, at least.
Absolutely. So the fear of failure or failing for me with the food stuff, and I just always just staying on the ground. It's staying on the ground. It's not getting off. It's like just on like a plane, and you're just like along the runway, and you're not actually taking off.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like with all of these ideas. I was like, and I was like, one day I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I just took that one step, and it was scary. And I felt the fear, but I did it anyway. And like now it's like, if you look at I was just saying to you the other day, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so humbled. I feel so appreciated and just everything. Like all these people were just saying all these beautiful comments on my food and how I've really inspired them, and I'm an inspiration, and yeah, it's incredible. And I never in a million years thought that that would be the result.
You make some beautiful creations.
And it all comes from the heart. Like it absolutely comes from the heart. Like I will intuitively cook. I can't really be a baker because
I've seen you bake. That is true. You are more of a baker artist.
Yeah, like I'll throw a bit of baker. This and a bit of that in, and it will just go no, because that's not the chemical balance. So things will flop, or things won't rise, or things will be stodgy, or whatever. But that's
the learning.
That's the learning. But with the cooking, yeah, I just feel that I'm in the right place, where I need to be, and creating these dishes and sharing them with the community and my friends and family and everyone else that wants to follow me on Instagram, because I never did it for like followers or Instagram fame or whatever what do you call those people?
Influencers.
Influencers. No, never did it for anything like that. On my Instagram is I just create whatever I want when I want. And people wanted to see it, so I just put it up there. But yeah, it's been incredible how people have just really been inspired by it, and that's so cool. Like, so cool. Yeah,
definitely recommend looking it up. It's colourful. It's food porn for the eyes. I've been fortunate enough to taste some of these blessings, but yeah, definitely looking forward to vegan vibes.
It's got love and it's got passion in it, in every dish. And if I make something that doesn't, I don't think I have, because I just enjoy, like, you know, I've got some sweet potato kumara in the cupboard, and I'm going to make some sweet potato brownies. And it's just like, it's a little bit crazy, but it works. And I've made them and they taste amazing.
And they're vegan.
And they're somewhat healthy because they've got cacao in them, they've got kumara, and they've got no flour. Mm. So it's like, it's not a stodgy binder, and they're light, and they're a good little snack, little treat for people. Yeah.
Yeah, what would you say to someone who doesn't really cook, or, you know, is not really familiar with the kitchen? Where would someone start? What's something simple, a dish, or what where can someone start getting into cooking for themselves? Because to me, one of the biggest skills we've lost today, and we should have it, every human should know how to cook for themselves or cook food.
Yeah.
A lot of us don't, because we just buy, we outsource
takeaways
or these delivery services. So to me, it's a bit of a shame that we've lost that, we've disconnected from that. Yeah, so what's something someone can do to
get
back into the kitchen?
So we're looking at something that's vegan, something that's not an animal byproduct or got meat in it and still super tasty and somewhat healthy. And that would be like a pesto pasta. So you get any pasta you want. I use a Kenwa Spirals. That's really nice. Like, so it's gluten-free.
Yeah.
Kenwa Spirals. And you chop up some garlic and some onion and some ginger. This is like kind of like my start on everything. Garlic, onion, ginger, turmeric. Not turmeric in this one, though, but garlic, ginger, and onion. Chop that up, finely sliced, and throw that in the pan with some oil. Or some coconut oil or some ghee, whatever you want. If it's ghee, then it's not obviously vegan, but some people like to cook with ghee. Fry that off. And then what you want to do is, if you've got like a NutriBullet or a blender, throw some coconut cream and some leaves of basil into it. So you're making your own pesto. You're not buying the pesto. And you can throw some almonds or some pine nuts in there if you want, but you don't have to. Bit of salt and pepper, bit of lemon juice, and whiz that up until it turns green. You're cooking your pasta in the pot at the same time, so you put that on the same time as you're frying your food. And then what you want to do is add some like vegetables to the pasta, so like some maybe some broccoli, some courgettes, and
so this is going in with the garlic, onion,
yeah, so ginger. That you cut that up and then you throw the courgettes in, because they'll take a little bit to cook. And I would blanch the broccoli. I don't like to cook broccoli that much. I like to just cut it up quite small and then put some hot water over it, put a lid on it and keep it, set it for like a minute.
Yeah.
And it just like blanches it. And then so you've got your courgettes, your onion, your garlic and your ginger in the pan. And you're cooking that away, and then you add the coconut cream with the pesto into the pan. So you're letting that reduce a bit. And then you throw your broccoli in, and then you let that reduce a bit. And when I say reduced, it just gets a little bit thicker. Add some cracked pepper and a little bit of salt. And then get your pasta, you drain it and rinse it. And then throw the pasta into the coconut cream. And then you want to finish off with some leaves of spinach and just throw that in, stir it all around, and voila, there's your pasta. Just like that.
Yep. No store-bought sauces, just homemade. And it is simple, yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I do use canned tomatoes, so I use organic when I can.
Mm.
And I add to that. So, like, for a Italian kind of, more of a bitey sauce, like tomato sauce, I would, giving away my recipes here, but that's okay. So the garlic, and what I would do is put some balsamic vinegar in the sauce and reduce that, and it gives it more of a bitey, tangy kind of taste. Throw some olives and some capers in there with your onion and garlic. Throw that all together and then add the can of tomato and the balsamic vinegar and reduce.
Yep.
And then just salt, pepper to taste, and you've got an amazing bolognese sauce there. Not like out of a jar that you just tip in there.
Yep. Yeah, because a lot of that stuff has additives, preservatives.
Sugar. Yep. A lot of sugar.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can buy some healthy pasta and canned tomatoes and make your own.
Yeah, so that pasta, that pesto coconut cream one can go either way.
Mm.
You know, you could still use zucchini, broccoli and spinach for the tomato-based one.
Right.
It's like a real just basic way to, you know, get some good healthy veggies and have a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Without, like I looked in the supermarket, and when I look in the supermarket and I see all those big bottles of bolognese sauces and things like that, I'm just like, why? Because it's laziness. It's convenience, it's laziness.
And it's not knowing.
And the not knowing.
So awareness, not just of self, but of what you need and what your kitchen needs. And
yeah. So all I always have garlic, ginger, turmeric, fresh.
Yeah.
Always have that in my fridge and in my cupboards.
I think you're starting to turn yellow.
The brightening, the glow, the brightening glow of the turmeric.
The anti-inflammatory glow.
Honestly, turmeric is so good for you. Good for you. I think it's only just coming out now how good it is. But in Ayurvedic medicine, you know, they would put it all in their curries.
Mm.
You know, we're starting to do this turmeric latte, so the golden goodness that I blend together. It's a beautiful way to be getting turmeric into your body, and it's tasty.
Yeah.
And you can add a bit of maple syrup if you want. The key ingredient there is obviously the turmeric. And then with the cracked pepper,
the black pepper.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the cracked black pepper. It helps the turmeric absorb into the body faster.
Of course, in the West, we like to isolate and reduce things down to its little, you know, distinct parts. So with turmeric, they've got curcumin.
Curcumin
extract that you can buy as a supplement. But then I know whole foods will always be the supplement.
Yes.
And there was, I think, I don't know if it was a paper or science study that I sent you, but, you know, it's shown that the whole food of turmeric is stronger than just the extract.
Yes.
And that's always going to be the case. It will always be the case.
And I don't know if anyone's like worked with fresh turmeric before, but it smells amazing.
Mm.
It's like a cross between a carrot and, what did I say the other day? It was cross between like a carrot and like some citrusy.
Mm.
It's just incredible. And the freshness of it. And in the Balinese culture, the Balinese cooking, they use turmeric all the time. It's like turmeric, lemon juice, ginger, garlic. And I made this dish the other night, a khichdi, which is an Indian dish. And then I made a Balinese sambal to put on top of it. Well, my own Balinese sambal, because I didn't have everything that I needed to make a real one. But, you know, chopped up, thinly sliced some red onion, some lemon juice, garlic, ginger, turmeric. I put in some fresh herbs, which, oh my gosh, just start growing fresh herbs because they're amazing for your salads and your pasta dishes, and they don't take long to grow, and incredible flavors that you get from them and beautiful health benefits. So I didn't even know what I was doing there with that sambal. I was just like, okay, well, I just want something a little bit tangy and a little bit citrusy to put on the khichdi, because it's like, khichdi, I don't know if you know about khichdi, but it's like an Indian dish, and it's Ayurvedic medicine, helps with the digestive system, so it's got all those beautiful spices and stuff in it. Yeah, so it was amazing. It tasted good. Like, it just worked so well together. So just experimenting, like, you can't do anything wrong. Well, if it doesn't work, just give it to the dog.
If it doesn't taste good, you know, then you've learned that whatever I've just done doesn't taste good. And it's not about this volume and measurement of ingredients. It's, does it taste good?
Yeah.
Because what I've noticed with you, Missy, is everything's Missy's version. And it always comes out great. Well, not always.
Yeah. No, I've had a few that haven't come out that great. The other thing that I love to make is baked oats.
Yeah.
And I've made a few of those over the past couple of days, and we made a peanut butter and jam one, and then a raspberry coconut and ginger one, and they both had organic oats in them and coconut milk or coconut cream, chia seeds. I do a ginger, cinnamon, LSA, which is your
linseed, sunflower,
and almond seed, all grounded up. So you're getting some really beautiful health benefits in there. Some sesame seeds, organic coconut, raspberries. And so the whole combination of those oats, once you bake them in the oven, you can just cut it into squares and serve and grab and go the next day for breakfast. Yeah. If you're a grab and go person,
you can eat it on its own, put it in a bowl, add whatever milk you like.
We had beautiful organic kiwi fruit and raglan coconut yogurt.
Oh, do you add banana to your baked oats?
Yeah, yeah. So the banana. So yeah. So sorry. The actual moistness of the oats as well is through a couple of bananas that are mashed.
Yep.
If you want the recipe, send me a message on BiteMeNZ, and I can send it through. But it's very basic. Like anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And
but I was just thinking, there's so much prebiotic fiber, which is good for your probiotics in your gut.
Gut.
Massive. It's
and you can change the flavor so much. Like I did a bounty one the other day. I've done an apple and cinnamon one, so like an apple pie. Just so many different ones. So, and it's super. And the great thing about it is you're mixing it in the same dish that you're cooking it in. Mm. So you do one dish and you just make it. Yeah. And mine lasts, well, when no one's around and eating it, mine lasts a week. So it's like, you know, grab a slab and off I go kind of thing.
Well, the PB&J one lasts at least 24 hours.
That was so popular. And that's just stirring in the peanut butter and jam, you know, on the top layer just before you put it in the oven.
Well, this has been a long chat, a good chat, a diverse chat, an insightful chat. Thanks for this, Missy. It's been really great.
Oh, I've actually really enjoyed it. I thought I was freaking out about it. I was like, oh my God,
you were at the beginning. But you found your groove. You found your groove.
It was like there's grooves all over the place. It's just like from one thing to another.
Mm.
I hope I wasn't too scattered on it all. And if anyone wants to ask me any questions or, I don't know, I guess just wants a bit of
inspiration on the food side.
Inspiration, yeah.
BiteMeNZ on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
BiteMeNZ.
Yes.
And come to Vegan Vibes.
Yeah, Vegan Vibes, 26th of October. So it's Labor Weekend in Mount Maunganui at Sopa Reserve, which is like in front of Rising Tide on Newton Street. So it's close to town and everything. There'll be a lot of people over for Labor Weekend, I would say. So, yeah, definitely come and see us. BiteMeNZ. I'll be serving up my nasi goreng pizzas. Jace will be there too.
Being of service, not eating the products at all. thanks, Missy. That was awesome.
You're welcome. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you once again, Missy, for that awesome conversation. It's been a fun, adventurous, nutritious, tasty time hanging out with you and learning about all the different ways that we can make food taste good, make you feel good. And yeah, so you're definitely an inspiration in my life. And if you'd like to be inspired by Missy's culinary arts and her dishes, look her up on Instagram, as mentioned, BiteMeNZ. And also, yeah, Vegan Vibes is just around the corner. So come say hi to her and try out her delicious treats. And I will leave you again with Missy's beautiful flute playing. But until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.